Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to The Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
We are back on The Andy Finn Show, and we're going to move on to politics. A lot's happened in the last 2 weeks. The main thing, I think, that happened in the Democratic campaign was the reemergence of Reverend Wright, and then Barack Obama distancing himself. Some would say separating himself from Wright, and what the implications of that's going to be. So to recap, of course, Barack Obama is still in the lead by about 130 delegates. It seems like an insurmountable lead that Hillary Clinton's not going to be able to overcome. But if Obama slips and people begin to think he's not electable, we might be talking about a different story. Tomorrow's the last of the really big primary days. Indiana and North Carolina are tomorrow, two states with significant delegates at stake. After this, there's not another day the size of this. And so it's important, but if Obama holds his own, if he's treads water here, it becomes harder and harder for Hillary to take it away from him. In any case, the latest polls show something that I think would puzzle Republicans, but it turns out that even the second wave of problems with Jeremiah Wright, and keep in mind what he did last week, and listeners to my show already keep up with other news, so you already know this, most of you, but Obama's pastor came out and went on a media blitz. Instead of laying low and not being a fly in the ointment, he decided to go out, and not only did he speak at a conference, he spoke at the National Press Club here in Washington last week and basically reiterated a lot of the stupid things he said before, like the government caused AIDS to harm blacks and all that stuff. And Obama finally distanced himself from him in a way that he hadn't before. And predictably, what you hear from conservatives is that it's too little too late, it's not enough. What you hear from liberals is, oh, I'm fine with it. And the truth is always somewhere in between. So we'll find out what the truth is when we hear more from voters. But for now, the polls are showing that it doesn't seem to have hurt Obama, which is interesting. And it's starting to look like the guy's got Teflon, and that must be what Hillary Clinton's thinking. But he's been pretty lucky as far as that goes. Now, what's interesting is the various editorials about this. Last Friday in the Washington Post, we had Charles Krauthammer and Michael Gearson writing articles, a couple of conservative columnists explaining why Obama's position on Wright isn't satisfactory to them and why it matters that his preacher has a certain view. In other words, when you think about it, I'm trying to think of the last time we really tarred somebody with the views of one of their friends or influences, you know. I'm trying to think who we could tar, you know, George W. Bush with or something. And in general, what I want to say is, we haven't seen the Democrats use that approach. I mean, there was the despicable ads trying to tie Republicans and Bush to the James Byrd killing and dragging death. But in general, the Republicans seem to play this kind of hardball a little tougher than Democrats. And, of course, that could be my left-to-center bias. But this idea that Jeremiah Wright is a legitimate issue. Sean Hannity hits on this all the time. You just have to turn the dial between 3 and 6 p.m. Just turn the dial to Sean Hannity, and he'll be talking about Obama and Reverend Wright and how important this is. And it's so good that they've uncovered this, but the mainstream media is not covering it, et cetera, et cetera. It's not clear to me why Obama's preacher matters. The views of his preacher are not the views of Obama. And we're going to play this game right down the line and tie McCain then? The Democrats will be forced to respond. Are we going to tie McCain to anyone he's ever associated with or associated with for a long time? I just hate to see us go that direction, but it may be where we go. And the other issue that we'll get to a little bit later is this issue of how Obama's being called an elitist at the same time he's being called a radical or associating with a radical. So there were two things that have come up recently. One is the Reverend Wright Part 2 that came out last week, but also Sean Hannity and other conservatives have been after Obama on the issue of Bill Ayers. Now, Bill Ayers is a 60s radical, member of the Weather Underground, who was integrally involved in planning bombs that blew up government installations or buildings or parts of buildings, but they always called ahead to make sure there'd be no civilians there, no people there, because they weren't into killing people. And it is true, three weathermen, died trying to make homemade bombs in a house. Bill Ayers is not particularly sorry that he protested the Vietnam War in that way. He felt we were on the road to wasting a million lives between us and them, and that it didn't make sense to stay quiet. So he's made statements since then to say, you know, I do the same again. I should have done more. We compromised too much. We needed to end that war, all of that. So that's his belief. Obama has some passing acquaintance with him and did serve on a board with him. I don't think he does anymore, but the conservatives don't seem to have that story right. They seem to claim that he is. In any case, he's not responsible for Bill Ayers' views. You want him to cut himself off from Bill Ayers? I mean, the guy has been working in local housing issues for years. He's a tenured professor at University of Illinois, Chicago. Are you supposed to shun him? And I guess the answer is yes. But then we're now back to the gotcha game. So what do we do with Hillary, and what do we do with McCain in terms of who have they ever associated with, known, served on a board with, who may be less than savory, and do we require them to shun those people? I just think it's a bit much the way it's going. In any case, the other thing that I want to bring up is that Barack Obama has been accused of being an elitist. Now, this is interesting because there's three charges have been raised against Obama, and all of them are rather strange. One is that his preacher hates America, and so how do we know Barack Obama doesn't hate America? Actually, there's four sets of charges. There's that tied to Jeremiah Wright. There's the Barack Hussein Obama stuff. He was supposedly raised trained in a madrasa, that kind of stuff, which is false, of course, spread by a right-wing website. And the right wing tried to claim that Hillary was spreading it. It was a twofer for them. But the point is that they went down this path of calling him by his middle name and claiming that he wasn't, essentially reporting that he probably wasn't a real Christian and a real American. Then there's the issue of Barack Obama's elitism, this idea that somehow he is aloof and removed from the common man, right? Now, let's keep in mind, all of these candidates have millions of dollars. The richest is John McCain, whose wife has over $100 million, and he makes his own money. The second richest is Hillary, because she and Bill made $109 million over the last 8 years. And Obama made, because of his book deals, he made several million this year, but they've been squeaking by on a six-figure income, but not much more for years. So with that in mind, Obama, the guy who's got the least amount of money, is the elitist. So it's not tied to finances, obviously, or Hillary and McCain would be elite. So what is it tied to? Well, it's this highfalutin education is part of it, right? He's a Harvard law grad, so is his wife, Michelle. So maybe it's your education that makes you elite. But, you know, George W. Bush went to Yale and Harvard. So theoretically, it shouldn't be that. I mean, keep in mind, you say, well, George W. Bush is a cowboy. Not really. He's playing cowboy now on his ranch for a few years, but they're going to sell the ranch and move back to the city as soon as his presidency is over. This was a manufactured image for Bush. But Obama, you can say what you want about him, trying to make him an elitist, but this is a guy who, when he finished Harvard Law, went back to the city streets and said, I want to be a community activist. I want to work to improve the lot of people. He could have gone with a high-powered law firm or clerked for a judge, a Supreme Court judge, any number of things that would have had his career accelerate quicker. Instead, he decided he's willing to retire to a different kind of life. Anyway, with the elitist stuff, what's interesting is they're trying to make out the guy who grew up in the inner city, whose mother was on food stamps, single parent home, all the disadvantages you might expect of someone who was, you know, raised like a regular American. They're trying to say he's the elitist. And the latest was this, you know, there's so many little weird things. He made the bitter comments, that's true, and that was a mistake. But also, he ordered orange juice instead of taking coffee when he was offered it for breakfast in some restaurant in the middle of one of the primary states here. And the pundits commenting about it act like, oh, you turned down coffee to order orange juice? You know, he's just not in touch with the people. And I'm thinking, what the heck? Suppose I prefer Diet Dr. Pepper in the morning as opposed to coffee. That somehow is an indicator? Do I have to do coffee? Isn't that the contrived approach that everybody says we want to do away with? I'm not sure, but I hope to get an answer, because when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Barack and his chances.
Hi, I'm Andy Finn, and I am begging you to listen to my show at www.andyfinn.us.
The Andy Finn Show, Uncommon Talk Radio.
Brains got physically larger the more we exercised them, that instead of going to the gym to pump iron, people would go to the library to pump ideas in order to impress the opposite sex.
Look at the brain on that stud.
Have you ever seen a brain that big?
Look at that guy. He's huge.
I gotta start working on my head.
Wow. I'd like to look up next to that brain every morning.
So tune in the Andy Finn Show and grow your brain. It's the only one you've got.
Listen to the Andy Finn Show at andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show. And in this last segment, we're going to talk a little bit about Barack's elitism and then a couple of other issues related to the election. So it's just really interesting to find that the black guy in the race is the elitist. I mean, I guess we've come a long way if he can be the elitist. But he had the most humble beginnings of any of the three candidates. And so there's nothing elite about his beginning or his path, right? He apparently pulled himself up by his bootstraps. There's nothing elite about that. He's got the Harvard education and he's well-spoken. But this idea he's not in touch is a little bit strange, whether it's being started by Hillary or by the Republicans or pushed by them. I just don't see it. But of course, if you think back, he's the likely nominee, and think back at the way Republicans attack Democrats going back the last few elections. Al Gore, John Kerry, weren't they called elitists? They were also called flip-floppers and or liars. Okay, and not real Americans. Well, what's interesting about those arguments is they use them against every candidate. Believe me, Hillary'd be called a flip-flopper if she got the nomination. The way Gore was dealt with and the way Kerry was dealt with, you can see it coming. You've been able to see it coming for a year. The Republican attack machine will hit on Obama's youth and inexperience will be one of their lines, but they've already used the patriotism line. You know, they've been running ads with Jeremiah Wright and trying to tie Obama and Wright to local candidates all over the country, but they're basically running a test. The GOP is testing out its anti-Obama strategy in these special elections. This was covered in the Washington Post this weekend in a special article about the campaign. But basically, this is something I haven't covered yet. There was a special election on Saturday to fill a congressional seat in Louisiana, and a Democrat by the name of Don Carew, I think it's pronounced, he won a seat that had been held by the Republicans for 33 years in Louisiana. And that's a bad sign for Republicans. And the ads that were being run against him showed Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and this guy, who doesn't know either of them. It shows Don Carew, and it says radical liberal agenda. Now, this is a relatively conservative Democrat, so it didn't quite work. On Saturday, he won the election and is now the latest Democrat in Congress. The Republicans have lost another seat. But they were running these anti-Obama ads against him, even though he doesn't even know Obama and hasn't decided to support him. So it's not surprising at one level. It's just that they're already out there using the old saws, which is out of the mainstream, you're too liberal, right? Radical liberal, not patriotic, which we'll get to in a minute, elitist, and they haven't gotten to flip-flopping because Obama, I don't think, has flip-flopped up anything, but that will come before the year is out. They'll find a couple things they flip-flop. And let me say this about flip-flopping. Some of my best friends have flipped, and many of them have flopped back. No, it happens. The flip-flopping, I mean, happens in politics. People change their minds about things, some legitimately, some for crass political purposes. But in 2004, if you've been listening that long, you know I did a radio show or two in which I compared week after week the list of flip-flops. I kept my own list of major, and we're not talking minor things, we're talking major policy changes. And not just from one bill to a related bill, but a complete reversal of your view on something. And Bush had more flip-flops than John Kerry did. But he got the title of flip-flopper. So, in the case of Obama, you can expect he'll get the same treatment as Gore or Kerry, or that Hillary Clinton would. Right? So in addition to saying that they will eventually say he's a flip-flopper and saying he's not ready to be president and we can't risk it in this dangerous world, there's this... And the charge of elitism, there's the issue of patriotism. So they've made a big flap over two things. This is just so silly to me. But the first is that Barack Obama doesn't wear a flag pin on his lapel. And the second is that he was spotted in one picture not covering his heart, not putting his hand on his heart during the Pledge of Allegiance. So now he gets questions asking about these two things and claiming to be, you know, wanting to know why he doesn't wear the flag lapel pin or why he doesn't salute the flag or honor it. Well, neither of those statements are true. He's never said he wouldn't wear a lapel pin. He basically called out the people that wear them as wearing their patriotism on their sleeve, if you will, or in this case, on their collar, on their lapels. And he believed that post 9/11, there's better ways to show your patriotism, like supporting the troops, truly supporting them. And he got hammered on both of these issues. The first one, the lapel pin, is the dumbest thing. The lapel pin issue, he's worn a lapel pin before. He's never refused to wear them. What he said was, post 9/11, there were people out there who weren't being particularly patriotic in the way they were dealing with issues, but they were, in fact, wearing their lapel pin. So he said, you know, I kind of decided, I've been wearing it since 9/11, I've kind of decided to take it off because there are people that are misusing it. And they want to make a big deal out of it and claim he refuses to wear a lapel pin. No, he put one on a few weeks ago. He'll put one on. It's not a hard and fast position with him. It's not important to him. And it's not a sign of patriotism. So there's the lapel pin, and then there's Barack's definition of patriotism. He's trying to recalibrate. And he's trying to say, look, patriotism is much deeper than whether you fly the flag or wear a lapel pin or whether you support the president at every turn. Patriotism deals with a lot of other things. And so he basically argued that Republicans use the September 11th attacks and the anniversaries over the years to scare up the most votes they could, and basically... they didn't try and bring the country together. They used the politics of fear. And, you know, that you'd have to be a conservative Republican with blinders on not to see that the Republicans have played the fear card each of the elections since September 11th, 2002, 2004, 2006. As we've said on this show before, the good news is that their ability to play it and get the reaction they want seems to be dissipating. That is, the farther we get away from 9/11, the more it's like, I don't want to say Pavlov's dog. You probably haven't had this experience, but if you ever walk into an animal lab on a campus where they've got rats in cages, and I know you members of PETA are going to have trouble with this one, but rats are very sensitive. So if you go in and clap your hands, every rat in every cage jumps. You do it a second time, they jump about half as much. Do it a third time, half as much again. Eventually, they're acclimated to it. So they're used to the stimulus. Right? So the arguments about fear that have been raised by Republicans in each of the last three elections, I think we are getting desensitized to them. And I think we're far enough away from 9/11 that all the gloom and doom and sky is falling rhetoric we're likely to hear from Republicans again, and particularly McCain in this case, I think they'll have less influence. I'm hoping they will. We'll have to see about that. In any case, Obama wants to make the argument that patriotism is about doing the right thing. It's about pulling people together. It's not about focusing on the fear, et cetera, et cetera. So I kind of like his message. So we'll see whether or not he can continue to rise above all this stuff. Let me take up one more issue before we leave the campaign stuff here, and that is that Hillary Clinton has put out a Arab defense plan, I guess I could call it. But basically, she's got a new response plan, a new plan is a response, I guess you'd say, to Iran's nuclear program, which, you know, we don't have proof. I mean, they're within their rights to do what they're doing so far. We can't prove that they're building nukes. They've agreed not to, but they could withdraw from that treaty at any time, as we have withdrawn from some of our nuclear treaties. But basically, Hillary said she wants to extend the U.S. nuclear security umbrella to our allies, our Arab allies in the Middle East. And the thing that the problem I have with this is this extending our word that we will come to the rescue of additional countries. You know, George W. Bush has already put us on the map for two countries. We had a very delicate balancing act with Taiwan when he came into office, and we never said that we would come to their aid if China attacked them. We left that uncertainty there, and Bush took it away. Bush came out and said that he would. He changed, in the middle of a speech, without, I'm sure, discussing it with his advisors, he changed his policy. He changed the policy of the United States in just a misstatement. And so Hillary is kind of coming out here really raising the stakes. We've never actually said we'd come to Israel's defense if they were attacked. I don't think we have to. I think they can take care of themselves. Thank you very much. With 300 nukes, they should be just fine. But Hillary's now saying we're going to extend this to Democrats. I mean, I'm sorry, to Democrats. To Arab countries, Saudi Arabia and these other countries. I just don't. I'm not sure that's the direction to go. We used to be much more cautious about this kind of stuff. Anyway, that's going to do it for another edition of the Andy Finn Show. We are not going to solve the world's political problems until next week here on WEBR. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Andy Finn Show. Until then, you can listen to past shows or read my writings at andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us, as in the United States. Until then, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.